You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Katarina Rando. We talk about her personal story and journey to becoming financially savvy. Those are the words she uses, financially savvy. Part of Katarina's story includes marriage and divorce. And I don't normally throw my opinions and stuff into the introduction to my episodes, but this happens to be a topic where I have just the tiniest bit of awareness around. And so I wanted to give you some statistics and background information about this topic. In 2025, we happen to be in a very interesting spot as women and as humans in the United States of America. On the one hand, there's actually very little that is absolutely denied to women who are born in the United States. You can have a bank account, you can take a loan, you can go to school to become an engineer or a doctor, you can buy a house and have it in your name. All of those things are definitely possible. And at the same time, it's still factual that one of the single most consistent indicators of socioeconomic stability for women and families continues to be marital status. Now, to be more specific here, I'm not saying the difference between a single woman and a married woman. What it actually is the impact of divorce. And divorced women, especially divorced women who are parents, divorced women with children, are often poor. And when I say poor, what I mean is that they would qualify for the classification of living in poverty. Let me give you the exact statistic. The poverty rate for households with a female head of house, so single head of house female, is 24.9%, 25% of those houses. For perspective, the male version of that statistic, single head of household, male head of household, 12% of those households are living in poverty. So that's that. And then in 2018, so not that long ago, but according to the U.S. Census, the pay gap for women was still 82 cents on the dollar for men. So for every dollar that a man earns in a job, women are earning 82 cents. That is not that long ago, you guys. And that's a statistic that still continues to surprise people. So this is a complicated topic with a lot of layers. I'm not actually an expert on this. Most of the things and ideas that I just referenced are not actually the topic of this interview with Katarina, but it was something that I wanted to introduce because it is related. I do personally think that this is something that we can and should continue to speak about with our friends, with our parents, with our aunts and uncles, and with our children. So if you're curious, some of the ideas that I and topics that I just offered are covered in a book that is called Backlash by Susan Faludi, first written in the 1990s, but there's an update in 2020, which is where the updated statistics come from. And it's really, really interesting, although a little upsetting to see how little has actually changed in those couple of decades. It feels like things should have changed, but some of the things that we feel should have changed haven't actually changed. It's a weird place to be. Anyway, now I'm going to get off of my soapbox. If you want to know more about the books that I read and recommend, I do have a bookshop.org reading list, for whatever it's worth. Anyway, off my soapbox, let's get on to the conversation with Katarina. Are you ready? Of course you are. Let's get to it. Katarina Rando, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am ready.
Yay. All right. I start all of my interviews with the same question. Tell everybody what part of the world you call home.
I call San Francisco, California home. I'm a native San Franciscan.
Awesome. All right. So today we're going to talk about becoming financially savvy. But before we do that, I want to ask you one more warm-up question about you. What's a recent compliment or words of kindness that you've given somebody, even if it's just something small from earlier today?
Something that I've told someone else.
Or you could turn it around. You'd be the first one to catch that loophole in my question and say, oh, I did this for me. Yeah.
Well, I will say that I got a message from a gal on Facebook a couple days ago that she said she listens to my podcast twice a day, once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And that really blew me away. That was probably the nicest compliment I've gotten, that someone listens to me twice a day.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. All right. Thank you. That does feel good. That would be a wonderful thing to hear. So the topic of the day that we're going to talk about is choosing to become financially savvy. I love this topic. So before we go too deep, I do feel like I need to talk to the audience for a second and share with them that you and I know each other a little bit in person already. And we've had several online conversations over the years. We even met in person in Boise last year, right? So the reason I think that's helpful for the audience is two things, right? One is when I'm talking to real life friends, I can go way off topic really quickly, and I will try not to do that in this. More on topic, for everybody is that this conversation is, even though I know you a little bit, I had no idea about the origin part of this story. This story actually starts with marriage and divorce. So can we talk a little bit about that? All right, let's do it. Let's go back to the really big beginning. And if I ask you something that's too personal, just tell me to buzz off. How long were you married, and how long ago did you get divorced?
I was married for 10 years. We got divorced officially a few months before the pandemic started. We had been separated for about a year.
Okay, so the divorce was finalized 5 years ago. Yeah, all right, 10-year marriage, that's a long marriage. All right, so now let's back up like a little bit more. I'm going to ask you a super general rear view mirror type question. If I asked you about like what were the values and ideas from your family of origin, like your parents, your community when you were growing up, about family and domestic responsibility and stuff like that, like what comes up?
Well, I'll start, Amy, by saying I'm Italian American,
Okay.
and really, I think all of that impl of what people might think about, very, very tight family, raised Catholic. I'm second generation American, so my grandparents came through Ellis Island. Hardworking family. My mom was a school teacher. My dad worked for the city as a mechanical engineer. And nobody drank in my family. Really good, solid family. Now, not to say that there wasn't some screaming like you might think in an Italian household, but I would say I got lucky with the parents' lottery
Oh,
for sure.
very nice. Very nice. So, very close. So, when I think of Italian American stereotypes of family, very, very close family, maybe traditional gender roles within the family. Like, you think of I think of the Italian grandmother, the nonna who's in the kitchen, and, so on and so forth. And that's the reason I thought of that question, because we're talking about money and being financially savvy. And that is one of the stereotypes, gender roles that comes up, is that in a marriage, the man does the money and the woman does not.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I will say that even though my mom was a traditional, school teacher, typical career for a woman, she got very savvy when her father passed away and left her a couple pieces of property. And she built a little bit of a fempire with her two pieces of property. She grew it. And in San Francisco, as you know, the real estate's not inexpensive. So she was able to upgrade a few times. And when she retired, her other teacher friends were on fixed income and she wasn't, because she had done well for herself with real estate.
That is a really interesting layer to this story, because you had an example of another financially savvy woman in your life. I love that. All right. So all right. So my next question is a little bit flawed, and I know it, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I'm going to ask you about self-reflection for yourself when you're younger, right? And that's like weird because you're no longer younger anymore. But if I had met you when you were younger, or somebody had asked you when you were in your marriage, right, whether you were financially savvy, how do you think you might have answered that question? Did you think you were already financially savvy?
Yeah, so let me say this. Like when I was a single person already running a business, I would pay all my bills every month. I never carried any debt. I had outstanding credit. So yes, I would have told you that I was financially savvy.
All
Absolutely.
right. Yeah.
And then after I got married, it was my dream, Amy, when I was married, for my husband and I to work together in business. And my previous spouse, he had some real great talents. He did all the travel planning for our retreats. He was a travel agent. He had worked for the Grateful Dead as a roadie.
Oh,
So
really?
yeah. So he did like the techno stuff in the back of the room when we did events at the hotels. You know, he had the soundboard and all that, you know. So he had some really great talents. He wanted to take charge of paying all the bills. And he was my husband. I trusted him.
Yeah.
And he and so at first it was fine, but then when I started to ask questions, then there would be a fight. And after a while, I stopped asking questions because I didn't want to fight, which is how I became unaware until the last possible moment that my funds were all vaporizing and a mountain of debt had been created without my knowledge. And again, these are things that I would not even think about, Amy, because I was a responsible, I had been responsible with my finances.
Yeah.
And my stock account vaporized, my retirement account vaporized, even though I had never given my spouse access to either of those.
Wow.
And credit cards were taken out in my name that I didn't know were taken out in my name. And there's more, but anyway, one day I woke up to a mountain, my friend, of debt. And I tried the first time to work hard and get out of it and not lose my marriage. But after about 5 years of all that, I finally had to realize that this situation wasn't going to change, even though I was working very hard to try to change it, but it wasn't
Oh my
good.
goodness. So I really am happy that I asked about the time frame of this because this is a story that we would, I think many of us would like to think only happens to older generations of women who did not like that we have that benchmark in it's like, 1973 when we could get our own credit cards, right? So we still think of this as things that happened to our grandparents but no longer happen to younger women. And I wish that was true, but this story is not that old. So some of the words that we use, I've talked to other people who've been involved in this, like this is sometimes called financial infidelity when it happens within
I call it betrayal, financial betrayal. Yeah.
financial betrayal. I've heard that too. Yes, so that's very good. How did you discover, because this was happening and you were unaware, the words I would use, and you can tell me if you say that I'm wrong, like you were giving your partner credit for he had the same ideas about financial responsibility as you did. Because you were financially responsible. So then how did you find out that this had happened?
Well, I would say that his perspectives on finances were different. Like I told you, I paid my bills
Right.
immediately and on time. His idea was to wait as long as you can to pay a bill. And I always operate with integrity, you know. His idea was to get whatever get the most you could and get it down to the lowest price and like all that kind of thing. He was the kind of person that would take a day to go down to City Hall to fight a ticket, you know? And for me, it seemed like ridiculous because you're wasting a lot of time to do
So
that.
you would just pay it.
I would absolutely just pay a
Yeah.
parking ticket. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. And so the day that I became aware of it was when we had to pay a substantial amount of money to a hotel for a retreat. It was our final payment. And he had to tell me that we didn't have that money. And so I had to scramble to get that money to take care of that. But it then revealed all of the places that had been depleted.
So then you went through a process of investigating and checking on the other accounts.
Well, I mean, he told me, he had to tell me when I started asking
Okay. So it was like a conversation. It's like, where did the money
questions,
go?
and yeah, and then I went really into fix it mode to try to fix everything, and I had to ask myself if I wanted to throw to leave my marriage too. And the first time it happened, I didn't want to. I figured this is what hard times in marriage look like, and we'll get through this. But after more years of it, and then of course I shouldn't say of course, the rage increased. My husband was a rager, and he was also a closet drinker, which I mentioned earlier. I wasn't raised in a family where,
Okay.
so I didn't see it, because I wasn't used to it, you know. I thought the rage was rage. I didn't know it was alcohol induced.
So yeah, when you mentioned that earlier, it was just a data point in what you were saying. I didn't understand the context, but the context is that there's a through line that was an impact to, that he was drinking, that it impacted how you were able to do this. So initially there's a problem. You jump into fix it mode. You're very much trying to keep the relationship together and rebuild your financial accounts. It becomes too much to manage and the pressure dissolves the relationship.
It wasn't even the pressure and the too much to manage, Amy. It was realizing that it doesn't matter how hard I work, it doesn't matter how much I try to fix it. If I'm in a marriage with somebody who is not gonna do anything to help.
Okay.
And the other thing is that there were, you know, again, I was raised in a house where you told the truth. So when he told me lies, I believed them because he was my husband. Why would he lie to me? But that was also present. So I couldn't even believe anything he told me after a while.
Yeah, and that was the reflection I was trying to ask about before, because I know for myself I'm very similar in that whatever is true for me, I'm very inclined to believe that and not question that in other people. So I'll use a like not very dramatic example. I like to be early when I go places, and I can be very confused when other people do not operate that way. Right. So me moving to Miami was an entire recalibration of what it means to be on time. And no judgment there, but you know, for me, I'm like, well, how could everything, you know, come on, like 10 minutes early is late, you know? But yeah, if you are operating with the assumption that your partner is going to pay the bills the way you would, and be honest with you the way you would, it's harder to see when they don't do that sometimes, I think, is my experience. Yeah. So, okay. So, as a result of the divorce, give us an idea of what your financial situation generally was, and how you became aware of the conscious decision. You were like, all right, I'm going to work on becoming financially savvy.
Well, at first I'm working on getting income in the door, and I did debt consolidation,
Okay.
which I thought was the savvy thing to do, but it just effed up my credit more, which is very disconcerting. Today, I have no debt. My stock account is beyond where it was before. My retirement account is not back to where it was, but I'm continuing to build it. I've gotten way more savvy. I like to invest in stocks. I'm investing in WCEO, which is a fund for women that they fund CEO go excuse me. They fund CEO companies that are run by women only,
Okay.
which I want to shout out about. WCEO is the fund. And I also know that my PTSD has me talking to my clients more about making sure that they're managing their money And today I look at my accounts every day. I just got back from vacation and I have not, the last few days, I hadn't looked every single day. And guess what? I have a bunch of PayPal charges that I'm like, where are these charges from? You know, now I'm going to check it out. We're going to, and so I'm on it like immediately. Whereas before, I would be more relaxed about it. I wouldn't be looking at everything every day. And even though nobody else is in my money, it's still important for me to look at everything to make me feel secure, I guess, about all of that after having gone through this. And I want women to recognize the power of revenue in the door for personal empowerment, you know, that women, it's not just about personal confidence, it's about money confidence and financial confidence. And just like we can have confidence in our body, we want to have confidence in our financial life as well.
I love all of that. So when you got divorced, what was the financial situation that you found yourself in? It sounds like there was maybe a lot of debt.
There's a ton of debt, and I took on most of it because my partner said he would take on some, but it came back to me after.
As a part of the settlement, it ended up in your responsibility.
There wasn't, I mean, in terms of settlement, my partner was, you know, he didn't take anything from the marriage.
Okay.
There wasn't anything left to take anyway. So we didn't have children. We didn't own a home. So that was not an issue. And I did what I needed. You know, I worked hard. I took loans. I took out two, Amy. I took out two very high interest loans to keep my business afloat. And that was really what had me realize I can't stay in this marriage, was that my business was in jeopardy. And this is a business that I had had for 15 years before I got married. And I certainly wasn't willing to let it evaporate also.
Okay. All right. That is very interesting. All right. So I'm going to talk directly. This is a good time for me to talk directly to the audience and invite them into the conversation. I'm talking to Katarina Rando about becoming financially savvy. And if you want to join the conversation, I invite you. I post a discussion question on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. So come read the question, answer. I'll be there in the comments. Katarina will join us. Other listeners and people watching will join us. It's super fun. If you need the links, they're in the show notes, of course. Now, back to the topic of what we were talking about. So, I want to talk about sort of define the vocabulary for a second. When we say becoming financially savvy, I think that could mean a ton of different things. What does it mean to you when you think about being financially savvy?
Part of it is knowing the vocabulary of all the different financial terms. Part of it is having financial goals. And financial goals is not just about what we earn, it's about what we save, what we invest. I mean, you know, the thing about being a second generation American is, you know, when immigrants come, they work hard to make money, and that's
We know
great.
that from Hamilton. That's in the song.
Okay, and that's great. They work hard. And that's kind of the phase one of building wealth. Phase two and phase three are having is investing. And phase three, I would say, is entrepreneurship and having other people work for you. And I really want people to recognize the power of entrepreneurship as a financial strategy. It's great for saving money on taxes. It's great for having extra income. And then there's real estate and the stock market, you know, and I'm what you would call a long-term investor in the stock market. I used to call it my old lady money. Now I'll call it my centenarian money, you know, for way down the road. And that we have to educate ourselves, and we have to be willing to ask questions, you know, when so I will tell you, Amy, my father is 93, and when he turned 92, I said to myself, I better learn about all this stuff, because he used to give me like advice on, you know, stocks and that kind of thing. And he still does, but I figured it by the time he was 92, I better figure out how to do it myself. So I opened a Charles Schwab account, and you know how I did it? I called him up and I said, how do I do this? How do I open an account, and how do I make a trade, and what about this, and what about that? And I asked all those beginner questions that I think a lot of women are hesitant to ask. And I got great support on that phone call, and I felt very empowered when I hung up the phone. And it's important that we be willing to not present like we know everything, to
Yes.
learn what we need to know, and then to go to seminars and to have trusted advisors and all of those things. And really, you know me, I'm a lot about women helping women. There's many women out there that want to support other women in developing more financial savvy.
There absolutely are. And I think that what you said about be willing to ask the beginner questions is even more important, because there are women who are in finance and there to give support and assistance. So, you know, finance and investing is absolutely an industry that for a long time was very male dominated. And it was, but now there are people like Dow Jane and other things, but that almost adds a layer of, oh, I should already know this, to people who are beginning to ask the question. That's like, it's another reason do you have to like sort of pump yourself up and be like, it's okay for me to ask.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing, is like I don't ever think about I should already XYZ. I think about we're always upgrading, Amy. We're always upgrading. And when you have that attitude, like, okay, I want to upgrade my health, I want to upgrade my house, I want to upgrade my financial savvy, we tend to not get down on ourselves. And that's really an important part of this conversation, because you're right. We've only been able to get credit cards since 1973, and like, you know, all these things that we weren't acculturated to be financially savvy. And, you know, I graduated from, I've got a master's degree, my friend, and I never took a class on finance. You
Right.
know, when I was in high school, they taught us how to balance a checkbook, you know? I mean, that was the extent of my personal finance education. And it breaks my heart, really, because
Yeah.
I would like to have learned a lot more of these things earlier in life.
Do you still have a checkbook?
I do have a checkbook.
Do you
Yes.
when it, do you still balance your I have not balanced a checkbook in a million years. Like I do have a checkbook. I have like the accounts and I look at things, you know, but that was a thing we did in school, balancing the checkbook. But the actual, with the advent of like online banking, where I can just go and like look at things and spreadsheet, I have not, I have, do you do
I have not ever in my whole
it? Never
life
ever done it.
checkbook.
The I did an interview with somebody else who recovered from extreme financial infidelity and had to recover, and she actually still does it because, like you were saying, checking in on the accounts. She was very upfront. She's like, this makes me feel confident. She's like, she does that. So I, not to throw shade on people who are still out there keeping a hand ledger, love you guys, but no, I haven't in a million years. I wouldn't have any idea.
It's totally fine, as long as you're in your money on a regular basis, looking at it, I mean, like I said, I look at every single little thing, and there's, you know, last night there was seven charges from PayPal, $3, $5, $7. I have no idea what they are, so I'm on it.
Three. That no, it's and it is very good to do. All right. So there are a lot of like layers, and I'm gonna use the word intersectionality, which it doesn't, I don't know if it actually fits here, but to this story, like within the story of the money, you went through debt consolidation and recovery, and you're also talking about investing and entrepreneurship. Those are layers. There's marriage, there's money and business, and entrepreneurship, which is a part of this story. And so you started to talk about this, but I want to give you a little bit more time to talk about it. Why do you think that it's helpful or even important for people to go through doing the work to take responsibility, become financially savvy for themselves and their lives?
Well, money gives you choices and it can give you a feeling of freedom. You know, I just came back from Thailand. Well, that didn't cost me $5. You know, that was
It was not the $3 PayPal charge, the trip to Thailand.
right. It was a big investment, and I get to, and by the way, investing in ourselves is the best thing we can do with our money. And I get to decide how I want to live my life because I have the resources to do it. If you don't have the resources, you don't have the choice. You know, this is why women have to stay in jobs. I mean, my friend, I pay so much every month for health care because I'm self-employed. That's okay. I can choose that because I have a thriving business and I have resources. And it's important for people to recognize that money is a tool. And also, you know, then I get to help the charities that I want to help. I get to help the people I want to help. And this idea that money is not a good thing is ridiculous, because part of what you're also saying is, I'm going to leave the wealth to the billionaires and thinking that they're better stewards of it than you. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a great steward of money. I do good things with my money. And if I had more, I would do more good things, not like some of the billionaires on the planet. Some of them are great. I have great respect for Warren Buffett and other men that do well, but I want more women at the top. And the more women, because you know what women do? Women invest in their communities, they invest in their children. You know, this idea that we just buy more shoes is a myth. Women do good things with their money, and that's why I want more women to have more wealth, but also because I want more women to feel personally empowered to make the choices and live the lives they want that they can when they have the resources to do it.
Love that answer. All right. So you and I, okay, so then follow-up question for that because it relates to your story. Do you think that the decision to choose to be financially responsible and financially savvy, do you think it has any impact or connection on marital status? Like, is this something that you need to wait until you're single or divorced to do? And do you think that it matters whether you're an employee or a professional or an entrepreneur? Or is this a conversation that really all people should be having with themselves?
I'm going to tell you my big pet peeve, Amy, related to this, is when a woman who has her own business says to me that she has to check with her husband before she makes a purchase. And I'm thinking, if it's your business and it's your money, why do you have to check with someone? Hey, I'm not married, so you know, but my point is that women have to feel empowered enough to make their own damn financial decisions for their own money. And I find it offensive, honestly, Amy, that somebody else gets to decide what you're doing with your hard-earned money. Now, I'm all for people having joint accounts and all of absolutely. But women have to be their own sovereign for their own money. And by doing so, they will feel empowered to make their own decisions, which as a result will give them more confidence for the future decisions.
Yeah, I'm going to add some color commentary to that just for fun. those commercials that we see, because there's like, you can, if you're in a relationship in a family, and it doesn't have to be a marriage, you could be living with friends or siblings or parents. If you've got shared finances with people, there's a difference between having, shared goals and responsibilities. Like those commercials around the holidays where somebody goes and gets a car for another person in the family as a surprise. Like I'm going to independently buy you a gift that might be $100,000 without talking to you. Like that might be a random, that might be, there's not a whole lot of families where there's not, you shouldn't, it shouldn't be a surprise. Right? And it always cracked me up, although, fun. And then the other thing that's so funny is many, many years ago, I was having a conversation outside of an elementary school. So I was waiting to pick up my kids in elementary school. And another mom who knew our family, and we had a lot of things in common. And she was like, "Well, how do you ask your husband for permission to buy these things for triathlon? Because that's a hobby of mine." And I was like, "Oh, no, that's not a thing that happens in my house." I understand the budget. And like I buy the things that I'm buying, and I know how much I can spend. And then, of course, there are conversations where it's like, I'd like to buy a house. I might not be making that decision by myself, right? So, but I think that if I, you ever see a joke on social media, it's like, what would, if we heard, what would, if you were kidnapped by somebody, what would be the code phrase so that we would know that you needed rescue? Mine might be, I need to check this with my husband. Like, I need to check with my husband for this. Like, it's just not usually a thing that comes out of my mouth.
Well, I can, I, you know, and that's the thing is everybody is on a different place in the spectrum about this. And maybe because my mom was very financially empowered. I mean, my dad had a job, my mom had a job, but my mom never had to check with my dad before she went shopping downtown.
Right.
She had her own money, and every woman needs to have her own money, Amy. And that's part of the reason why I'm such an advocate for entrepreneurialism is because that gives you your own money. And I want every woman to feel financially empowered.
All right, that is very good. Okay, so I actually know you through Business Today. That's how you and I came together. But I learned on social media, I think maybe on your recent trip to Thailand, which was super fun for me, that at one point you previously had like a completely different business that I think was based with food.
Yeah, I used to own a cafe and catering business.
That was super fun for me to learn that. Totally off topic, but super fun for me to learn. All right, so you have answered a piece of this. When did your, because your entrepreneurial journey is not connected, did not start with the divorce. Talk to us a little bit about how you got yourself into entrepreneurship. Were you always in entrepreneurship? Was there ever a time that you were employee, Katarina? Like,
Yeah,
how did this
well,
happen?
if you go back, my friend, to when I worked at Baskin Robbins and I got fired for giving away too much ice cream, which I thought was community outreach, but they didn't see it that way. Okay. So I was not a good employee. I did not like and by the way, I got the most tips of anyone at Baskin Robbins because I gave outstanding customer service, okay, even when I wasn't giving away ice cream. And so having somebody else tell me what to do and how to do it. I did not vibe very much with that. So I worked for my sister at her cafe, and then when she decided to leave, I ran it with another gal, and then I became the owner, and then I also grew the catering business. But I realized I did not like food service. I liked business. I liked serving customers. But I didn't like chopping and blanching and dicing and all that stuff. So I one day this gal came in my cafe and she thanked me for some business advice I had given her. And her smile was so big and her gratitude was so huge that I literally felt a pang of bliss in my heart. I was said, "Wow, this is what I want to do. I want to help women be successful in business." Now, at the time, my friend, I was not the queen of business. I did not know everything about everything, but I knew I wanted to help women grow businesses. So I sold my cafe. I hung out my shingle as a coach. And this is like when nobody even knew what a coach was, because I'm going back 30 years. And I started to mentor business owners. And I started to speak because I didn't really know how to sell. You know, when you have a cafe, people just walk in the door. It's not like you got to go out and sell something. And as a result, I learned to speak. I eventually learned to sell, and I learned enough about business that I've been able to mentor women for the last many years, and it brings me a lot of bliss. I've run over 300 group programs. I take women on retreats. I have a center in San Francisco where I teach my speaker retreats. And the other thing I've learned, Amy, is that women thrive in community. And so we have a community for women in business, and that brings me much joy in my life.
I would The joy is evident in how listening to you talk about it, actually. It's really there. So you answered a lot of this already, but I want to give you an opportunity to tell people directly what your business is and how you would like for people to follow up for you
Sure.
with you if they're interested after they see this conversation.
Yeah. Well, I do a free workshop every month, usually on sales or authentic selling or on using speaking to grow your business or how to do retreats or how to bliss in your business. People can connect with me through my website, katarinarando.com. My podcast is called Expand Your Fempire with an F, which we've done over 150 episodes. People can listen to our awesome podcast and be my friend on Facebook. I got room for more friends because I lost my account a couple of years ago. And that's really where I hang out the most, more than LinkedIn and Insta, although you can also find me there. And I am always wanting to connect with and support women that see their business as their mission. It is my mission to uplift women through entrepreneurship. I'm born on March 8th, which is International Women's Day, and I chose early, and I feel very lucky that I found my thing early. I chose early to have my life be about empowering and uplifting women through entrepreneurship because, Amy, because I want them to thrive financially and I want them to feel in control and at choice in their life.
I love that. I'm a person who believes that even outside of money, that there's power in making decisions. That's one of the places that that sensation of being in control and empowered comes from. So that resonates with me. So you do have a free monthly workshop that the listeners can get, and the link for how to claim that will be in the show notes for everybody who is listening and watching. The easiest way to get all the links to these things is always to be a subscriber to my email community, because then I deliver it directly to your email box. You can just click on it. That is a little sales pitch, sign up for my email list. But it also is true. It's so much easier than hunting for things through the show notes. Easy peasy. All right. Are you ready, Katarina, for the final three questions?
Absolutely, my friend.
So usually I make these like not at all related to the person or the topic, because I'm usually having the very first conversation with somebody during the interview. But I cheated a little bit for you because I do know you a little tiny bit. I, for example, know that you love to travel. And so, what is one place that you have been, or one trip that you have taken, that you know that you do not need or want to repeat again?
I will say the first thing that came to mind is Bali, not because Bali's not beautiful, but when I was there, which was about 20, 30 years ago, the bugs were so big. And we did not have VIP accommodations. So it was like, so hot. And even though I might go back if I had super VIP accommodations, but I think I'm good. I mean, Thailand was really awesome, and I would definitely go back to Thailand. So I'd probably pick that
All right,
over.
very, yeah, I tried to flip it around, like, because usually I'm like, where would what's something great? But it's like, where wouldn't you go? That's really, Bali is far away too, so it's good to know that. All right, so what is a piece of advice that you can remember getting, like, as a child, and you can define child however you want, that you still use today?
Well, remember I mentioned my mom was a school teacher,
Yeah.
and she, I guess before I went on a date or something, like she talked to me about how to be interested in the other person, like to think about before you go on the date, what are five things you can ask them about themselves, and to really be able to express interest in other people, like not only talking about yourself. So that is absolutely something that I did in dating. I still feel I'm looking for my new boyfriend, Amy. So it's like, I feel like I am a really good date because I do know how to seem interested in someone and really be interested in someone, even when I'm not interested in them, because I know how to ask interested questions.
That is a really good piece of advice. I love that. Now, I could go totally off topic here and ask you about your dating life, but I'm not going to. I'm going to resist the temptation. Today in 2025, when you have a question, like something you want to figure out or you want to know, what's the first place that you yourself find yourself going to for answers? Are you going to Google? Are you hitting up social media? Are you in the library checking out the card catalog? That's a little bit of a joke. Are you using an AI chat tool, phoning a friend, something else?
Yeah, I would say that I'm using ChatGPT a lot, even to ask, how to boil an egg or like something like that, like how long should I boil my egg or like just any question. It's very easy to go there and ask the question and
Yeah, I
like it.
agree. I
I like
agree.
it.
One of the things that I find that AI, that ChatGPT is very good at, this that I will throw in my support for that, is technology support. So like software that has like really crappy manuals, I will go into ChatGPT and be like, how do I XYZ in this software? And it is often spot on. We'll walk through just like really, it's like, I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. Cause there's no software comes with instructions anymore. You have to get in there and figure it out. And have you ever been like looking at the screen? You're like, I don't even know where to push.
And that's great. And I'm excited. I was thinking about it this morning, like what's happening with this tool and where's it going and where's it taking us? And I'm very excited about the future of AI for women and for entrepreneurship.
I know, I agree. All right, that's it. Katarina Rando, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today.
Thank you, Amy. My privilege to be with you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.